Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of June, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, here comes the news. Monday, at their Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple announced the new...
Heathen.
Wrong CEO. Even a guy anymore. Yeah. I'm way back to a different CEO. Living in the past much? At the Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple announced a huge batch of products aimed straight at the heart of existing companies and apps. And here's a list of everything Apple tried to kill at the Worldwide Developers Conference. Dropbox. iCloud has never been a hugely appealing cloud storage option. That's at least partially because Dropbox and its contemporaries are so good. Apple's revamped iCloud Drive, though, comes with one of the best features from Dropbox, the ability to manage a folder of cloud-based files directly from a Finder window, exactly as if the files were saved on local storage. In fairness, Dropbox is hardly the only service that offers this feature. I personally am a huge fan of Copy, which maybe we'll talk about later at some point. Sketch, Evernote-owned annotation tool Sketch, is totally awesome, which is probably why Apple has taken many of its features and incorporated them into the Mail application as a tool called Markup. And with Sketch, you'll be able to write and draw on documents as well as add fun effects like text bubbles to images, PDFs, and text. Hightail, sharing files, large files using Hightail, which is also known as YouSendIt, or WeTransfer, isn't as essential as it used to be these days because people are simply using share links from Dropbox and other cloud storage services more and more often. Still, the new Mail Drop feature built into Apple's refreshed Mail application might help make them irrelevant for good. The new feature allows you to upload files up to 5 gig and attach a secure link in your email directly from the email client. WhatsApp or GroupMe message... Group messaging, instant messaging in general, wasn't fully featured enough on Apple's iMessage platform for really to be much of a threat to its competitors in WhatsApp and GroupMe. But in fact, it could often be pretty brutal, as a matter of fact. But Apple made some big improvements to iMessage. It could give the incumbents a run for their money. SoundHound and other music recognition services. Shazam has long been the leader in music recognition, and on Monday it was buttressed by Apple, with integration directly into Siri and iOS 8. Nest, which actually is owned by Google now, right? Apple didn't burst through the front door of the Internet of Things with hardware. Instead, it decided to develop an API that helps developers create tools to easily connect and control your gadgets just using your phone. And Aperture, this might sound weird, but it seems like Apple might be trying to kill its own software. For a few years, Aperture was a decent professional photo editing suite, but these days it's been buried alive by Adobe's Lightroom and free products like Pixlr. Aperture hasn't seen a meaningful update in years. Monday, Apple previewed a new photo experience it said would launch early next year. It's a much more sophisticated editor than what you get with iPhoto today, with a lot of tools and sliders inherited from Apple's Pro Suite. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's looking to kill a lot of competing products, and your choices are Apple Forever, could be interesting, Apple's market share is too small to matter, and I'll leave my comment in the poll discussion forum. Right now, Apple's market share is too small to matter is in the lead. With half of the votes. I'll leave my comment in the poll discussion forum is second. And if you want to leave a discussion of a comment in the discussion forum, it's real easy. Scroll down on the, and you'll see on the right a heading called Fascinating Stuff. Under it is a link to the forums. And when you click on that, assuming your middle button actually works, mine has stopped. You'll see the forums. One is show discussion. The second one is poll discussion. And if you open that up, you'll see that the top one is 7 June 14 Apple's looking to kill a lot of competing products. There are 7 posts in there already, and you can join in the fun. But stick around with us as well and give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And this is a time-honored tradition in the Apple community. We call it getting Sherlocked. It goes back to 2001 when a developer at Corellia Software had a really cool searching tool called Watson. Apple came out with a program called Sherlock, the version 3, that took everything that Watson did and made it better and killed this poor guy's company. And so now every new operating system, you run the risk of getting Sherlocked, that whatever you're making, Apple will include in the operating system and limit your business.
Yep. And yet people still seem to write for Apple.
Well, and so the challenge now is to differentiate yourself some way, make your product better or different. There's 4 or 5 launch bars for Apple. Alfred is a very popular one, and there was a lot of early worry that Apple's Spotlight tool would replace launch bars, because you click your Spotlight and start typing something and it finds it. So you don't need to go to your applications folder. You don't need to go to your documents folder. You just start typing something. In fact, somebody in one of the blogs at the time even said it's the end of folders, because you don't need folders anymore, because Spotlight just finds things. But it doesn't work fast enough, and so other companies have written things that are much faster and are very, very popular.
And we also heard this week Archandra actually in the discussion forum mentioned that he saw a story this past week saying Apple wanted to remove or eliminate the headphone jack.
I haven't read that one, but I did read that the iOS 8 is going to allow lightning connections to your computer, so you can use your iDevice camera as a video camera. And there is a made for iPhone a standard available for lightning-based audio jacks. So instead of plugging headphones into the headphone jack, which is a very low level, you can plug it into the lightning connector, which gives you line out rather than headphone out. So you get a much higher level, and the developer of the headphones can control that signal better. So I wouldn't expect to see the elimination of that 1/8-inch headphone jack. Not just yet, maybe, but developers can use that line out from the bottom.
That's the last piece Apple doesn't control, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a standard they don't own. How long has that headphone jack standard been out?
Right, but Apple doesn't own it, and so people are, if one person buys a headphone that wasn't made by Apple, there are people at Apple who stay awake all night worrying about that.
Yep. Well, and some people think that's why they bought Beats, to make better headphones, yeah.
Well, they're going to have to make them way better than. Have you listened to a Beats headset?
No.
I don't like it.
Really?
The lows are very tinny.
Yeah, then no.
Which is interesting, because it's
I'm already hard of hearing enough.
Marketed to rap listeners, which have a lot of lows.
I don't like it. It's not. Well, and forget, many of them grew up in that era of MP3s.
Yeah, they're listening to crappy MP3s lows over the years. Yeah.
They haven't heard any real lows. I grew up in the era of tubes. I know what lows sound like.
Yeah, the 15-inch subwoofer in the car that blows the windows out.
But that's not necessarily a good sound.
Yeah, it's just, right.
It's
just loud.
It's a loud sound, but it's not necessarily a good tone.
But what the problem in making headphones is that there are so many different kinds of music where you need highs and you need lows and you need mid-ranges. And trying to make speakers that can do all three is tricky and expensive. You know, some of the high-end audio systems, $1,000 per speaker.
Yes.
If you want all, ranges covered adequately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I don't understand
and Beats is a $300 headphone, and they still don't get it completely right.
And if they don't get it right, I don't know.
You know, one, talking about adapters and that type of stuff, one that has not really been capitalized on, which I think would be the nuts, and Apple did it. And what I'm talking about is that magnetic power connector.
I love that. Yep. Well, they copyrighted that, so
yeah,
that trademarked it, registered.
What I'm talking about,
I don't
folks,
think they're offering licenses.
No, they aren't.
Because a lot of companies would like to do that.
Because what I'm talking about, folks, is basically Apple came out with a great idea. I mean, this is superb,
And it really is.
And it should become universal all over. And basically what it is whether you have a tablet, whether I've got a phone, whether I've got a laptop or any of those devices, instead of having that little prong that you've got to sit there and try to wiggle in, which inadvertently you will eventually bend, it'll get
destroyed. Because you're wiggling it, you shouldn't wiggle it, pull it straight in and out.
Or people go ahead and grab their laptops and off they go and they forget that it's still plugged in and it goes yanking back.
Trip over the cable.
Exactly. What it is it's a magnet. And it's magnetized. The minute you put it up near the device where it should be connected, it starts charging it through a magnet. And that is the simplest thing. You go to pull it away, the magnet will, you know, snap off.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't plug in. It just mates.
Yeah, it just mates like putting two magnets together.
Right.
And a lot of people complain that the MagSafe 2, which is it's thinner but wider than the original MagSafe Apple used, falls off too easy. The magnets aren't strong enough, so especially when you're holding it in your lap, it falls off too easy. So there's a couple of companies that make extra magnets to help hold it in place more.
But that is such a simple design, and it should be shared.
It won't be. Apple's not interested in that. They're only interested in making money. I get that.
Well, they do license technology, which is interesting that they won't license this,
right.
It's a market differentiation.
Right. I'm not knocking them at that. I'm saying that that's simply they're in.
But do they offer it like on their iPads?
They're in business to make money. That's
do they put it on
the on the iDevices? It's different because your power connection and your data connection are a single cable, and so you need more pins. So they could so right now the MagSafe connector actually has four pins on it.
Right, they could put more.
They could do more. And they could make it magnetic, and there are third party phones, non Apple phones that use magnetic induction for charging.
Mm-hmm.
But the data communications, there were a lot of people were upset when Apple went from the 30 pin dot connector to the 9 pin Lightning, because now we have to buy adapters.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of the PC world, they're using the micro USB standard, which is only 5 pins. And I think two of those pins are power. There's a +5 and a +12.
Mm.
Only +5. And the rest of the pins are used for data. But on Apple's Lightning connector, the pins are programmable. So and part of the announcements this week is HealthKit and HomeKit. So you can connect your devices with that Lightning connector, and they can be audio devices. There's blood pressure monitors. There's diabetic. Pinprick tests, blood meter reader. So there's all kinds of extra things you can plug into that connector that they say is easier than using a USB connector. But yeah, it'd be nice if that was magnetic, because in our story we get a lot of people where that connector has broken. You know, usually the same reason you're fiddling and wiggling. At least what's really nice about the Lightning connector is it doesn't matter which way you put it in. Either way is fine. We joke about the USB connector. You try it one way, it doesn't work. So you flip it over, try it the second way, and it doesn't work. So you flip it over, try it the third way, and it works.
Yep. Every time, too.
Every time, yep.
But then they're changing that as well. They're making a new...
new USB connector coming out.
New USB connector that doesn't have sides. And there are a lot of... that is the way I think people are getting around the Apple patent, by doing inductive charging, where you buy a pad and plug that in, just a little, not a tablet computer, just a pad, like a mouse pad. And then you plug that in, and then you lay your phone on it, and it charges.
Right.
Or you lay your computer on it, and it charges.
We have something similar to that now with, like, portable phones, where one set of terminals is exposed on one device, and it's exposed on the other device. And then, so when you put your phone in the base station, it charges.
Right.
But that's got exposed terminals, and that isn't nice.
Right. So if you can make it so that the thing charges inductively, then you've got. And there are a couple of phones that do that. There are a couple of other devices that do that. They're beginning to come out.
There's two standards that are competing for each other, of course.
Right. Of course, there are. Just two.
I think it's kind of whittled itself down to just two now. Yeah.
Yeah. The Galaxy S4 has that. I think the S5 has it, I think.
Why is my camera not working? Sorry about that.
That's all right. Chatters. Several other places have that. So it's an interesting new feature that I think will take over, because if I can just, you know, the people have cooling pads and all that other stuff
yep.
that they put under their computers. If that pad also does inductive charging, now you win all the way around.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour...
Fluke.
We are Soundbites. And, this was an interesting story here. In 2012, Apple won the year's biggest patent verdict, more than $1 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars, against Samsung. Apple also lost one of that year's biggest cases when an East Texas jury ordered it to pay $368 million to a company named Virnet X for infringing patents related to FaceTime and VPN on-demand functions used in iPhones, iPads, and Macs. Virnet X is a company some call a patent troll because its only business is now patent enforcement. Then, in March, U.S. District Judge Leonard Davis ordered an ongoing royalty payment to be paid to Virnet X. The number was downright stunning. 0.98% of revenue from iPhones and iPads sold in the U.S. To no one's surprise, Apple is fighting tooth and nail to avoid this outcome. The decision puts Virnet X back in the driver's seat, in a stronger position to collect a patent tax of nearly 1% on the most popular product produced by the world's richest tech company. One estimate suggests that Virnet X could soon be collecting around $340 million from Apple annually. I'll take 10% of that, thanks. I'll take 1% of that, thanks. Unless Virnet X's patents are vanquished on appeal. The 0.98% royalty fee was applied to not just the early iPhones and iPads considered during the 2012 trial, but also to newer products like the iPhone 5, 5th generation iPod Touch, 4th generation iPad, and iPad Mini. Apple spent tens of millions redesigning how FaceTime works to try to avoid the Virnet X patents, but in the end it was for naught. Davis found that the newer iOS products were not notably different from those adjudicated at trial. The patents originated at a company called Science Applications International Corporation, or SAIC, SAIC. They are now owned by Virnet X. Virnet X is getting close to a big win at a politically sensitive time, with the tech community and a broad range of companies still stinging from having lost the fight to push through an anti-patent troll bill in Congress. The stakes are high enough that Apple can be counted on to keep on fighting to the bitter end. Virnet X won't be able to cash in until it crosses the final hurdle of winning its argument at the federal circuit. Apple has filed an appeal against the 0.98% royalty, and an earlier appeal related to the $368 million verdict has already been argued. Virnet X wins have held up on appeal before. In 2010, Virnet X scored $200 million settlement out of Microsoft following litigation, and it went ahead and sued the software giant again in 2013. The company has also reached license deals with NEC, Siemens, and Avaya, among others. So should Virnet X be allowed to hold up their patent? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. This is an interesting question to me because I get that patent trolls are a bad thing. But most patent trolls have a shaky or essentially non-existent patent. Or a patent that doesn't really quite match. The Virnet X patent seems to be very solid, very real, and very much infringed upon.
So I wonder if Apple has tried to get the patent nullified. I haven't looked back into the history of the suit.
Right, right.
So that's what a lot of companies do when they get patent infringement suits, is they'll ask the court to look at the original patent and say, well, that shouldn't have been patented anyway. Like,
right.
Like the wheel or rounded corners, Apple. How did you get that patent?
Right, right, right. Yes, and somebody just patented the letter pi, the symbol pi.
I saw that, yeah.
And I, you know, I don't care if you patent it, just don't try to extort money from me when I use it.
Yep.
But in this particular case, it does seem like VernetX used to do real stuff. It was a real company. It eventually closed its doors as an operating company and now just is a patent holding company.
Right. And one of the problems for Apple in this case is that VernetX has gotten settlements out of Microsoft and NEC and Siemens and Aveya and a lot of other companies. And so now they go to the judge and say, look, all these guys are paying us, so Apple should too.
Right.
And that's a big mark against Apple.
Right, but Apple's doing that in a couple of cases. Microsoft is doing that, yep, in a couple of cases.
It's weird. All these companies suing each other, and in this way they're winning, and that way they're losing, and it's impossible. It keeps the lawyers paid.
Well, yeah, lawyers the only ones winning in this particular case.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the big reasons that Google bought all the companies it bought last year, mainly for their patent portfolios.
Yeah,
because now they can go to somebody like Apple and say, if you're going to sue us for this patent, we'll sue you for that patent.
Yep.
Or we can just cross-license.
There's all
you
the,
choose.
The Nortel patents that got bought by a consortium, and then the Kodak patents that got bought by a different consortium. And so that's the other thing, is a bunch of companies get together to buy a patent library against the company that's not part of the consortium.
Right.
It's frustrating. Right. If you ever just make your own stuff.
Well, but that's part of the issue.
Yeah.
At what point does intellectual property become community property?
Right.
Right.
And we need the standards. What if every computer brand had a different keyboard layout?
Right.
Somebody patented that QWERTY keyboard at one point. It's probably expired by now, but... In fact, isn't the story that they designed it to slow typists down, so the hammers?
That's fairly bogus, but yes, yeah. I've heard this story myself. The big thing, however, is not what you've patented. It's to whom and at what price you license it.
Yeah.
So, for example, Apple has patented the magnetic
MagSafe is their brand name, yeah.
That's not a problem. The problem is they're not licensing it to other people. They're not even offering it for license.
Yeah.
And if they did and they offered it at a reasonable price, they'd make money. Everybody else in the community would be safer and Apple would be a hero.
Yep.
As it is, not so much.
Now, Apple did license the name FireWire for the IEEE 1394 technology. And most, I think it was a buck a device or some, you know, a pretty small number. Most companies that were selling FireWire devices, and it was usually camcorders and then cables for those devices,
right,
and hard drives, would pay the license fee to use the FireWire. Sony famously just called it 1394.
Right.
Or they made up their own name, which was, iLink. So they didn't have to pay Apple their licensing fee. But it made it difficult for our customers. They come on with a Sony camera. I need an iLink cable. Okay, this FireWire cable will work. Well,
right.
No, I need an iLink cable. It's the same thing. It's just different names.
Right, 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 right. Well, that's where part of that comes in. Like I said, I certainly don't have an issue with somebody patenting something. Somebody. That's their right and as a citizen of the United States. I get that, except corporations aren't people, so they're not actually citizens. Except, of course, they are.
They're legally defined as an entity.
Right, right, right. But using it, the problem comes when you use it as a club.
Yeah.
To me, that's where the problem comes in. It's too bad, but that's the way it is.
We are seeing a lot of third-party knockoff, unlicensed power cords for the Mac. People are coming in all the time. I bought this on Amazon for $10, and it doesn't work. Well, because it's crap. And you know, if you've ever felt an Apple power cord, it's fairly heavy.
Yeah.
And these knockoffs are so cheap, spelling errors all over them. And we tell them, no, you know, you got to get the Apple one, which is $79, which is actually fairly common for OEM power cords on any brand computer.
Right.
Yeah, people, well, I bought it on Amazon or I bought it on eBay for $5. Well, you got a day of use out of it. It's worth $5.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that I really like is somebody now has a USB cable that turns at a right angle. And yeah, the back of that right angle is another USB connector. So you can daisy chain them right off the main power cord. Yep. It's really nice. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon. This is just a suggestion for Dave. I think it was last week he was having issues with soundtrack levels on movies and so forth.
Right.
The music and everything else was so loud, but he couldn't hear the dialogue.
Yeah, that was me too. Yeah.
Most audio equipment, TVs, and so forth have dynamic range compression built into their software or firmware somewhere. You might want to look around for that. You can knock it down so everything's in a very narrow dynamic range.
Oh, that's a good thought. Thanks.
Yeah, I've seen that on my TV. You have to go into your TV's audio setup, and it's usually something called wide or narrow.
Yeah, almost everything's got it these days.
Oh, yep. I'll have to check that out. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, have fun, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Always. And if you're piping your television output through your home stereo, then you may need to make the settings on the TV and on the home stereo amplifier.
Right.
Because the stereo amplifier can only amplify what it's getting from the TV.
Right.
Well, I turned the sound completely off on the TV, and I just use the sound bar now.
But where's it getting its audio from?
It's getting it right from the digital box, the cable box.
The HDMI connection.
Yeah.
So that's,
I've got an optical cable.
Optical cable, yeah.
Yeah, it's got an optical cable. This particular sound bar happens to use optical, and it works great. Yep. I mean, the clarity is so much better.
But the cable box also has audio controls hiding in it. There's like a settings button that you push three times and you get into the settings for the box,
right,
where you can control the audio of the box itself before it even gets to the television.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So there's too many places the problem could start. And if they're all set to be weird, you know, one has got it on wide, one's got it on narrow, and the other's got it on wide, then you're compressing it, expanding it, and it gets really crap.
Right. Well, that's the other part of the issue. If you leave it wide all the way to the end and compress only in that one place, that's probably best.
Yeah.
It's one compression, which means you lose less, and now you're getting the compression at the place you want it, which is the speakers.
Right. And with an audio cable, the bandwidth of the optical cable is supposed to be wide enough that it doesn't have to compress it at all.
Right.
Which is the best thing.
Right. Right. And so if you let it be not compressed as far as possible, then you're in pretty good shape.
Right down to the last point.
Right. Exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah. It's something to play around with, at least.
Well, and that goes right back to what we were talking about with Beats and everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, we come from a generation that listened to live sounds, or when we were listening to music, it was coming out of tubes, which have an amazing range.
Oh, yeah.
They actually did a study. The young kids today actually prefer the tinny sound of an MP3 to the rich sound of a tube or analog recording.
Oh, really?
Because it's what they grew up with.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So they don't hear the highs. They don't hear the lows. Mm-hmm. Those sound like bad artifacts to them.
Right.
Which is why, to my generation, Beats Audio sounds like crap. And why, to kids, Beats Audio sounds great.
Yeah.
And I do get that, but I don't see anywhere that Beats Audio is worth $300. I'm sorry.
Because Dr. Dre said it was.
Yeah, I've heard $300 headphones.
Good for him.
They're pretty amazing.
Yeah.
They're pretty amazing. But you know what? There's one born every minute.
Yeah.
And
some are
him.
Probably going to swear by it. You know, you're going to find both sides of the fence.
Yep.
It's just the way it is.
We say that with Bose, too. That's got such a huge name recognition. A lot of people swear by their Bose. But I've talked to other audio guys. You know, Nakamichi's better. And they have a slogan that if you can't hear the highs and can't hear the lows, it must be Bose.
Yeah.
So everyone hates everybody else, and theirs is the best one.
Why does that not surprise us?
Well, right. But, you know, if you talk to real audiophiles, I have friends who teach at Eastman and like that, and you mm-hmm. talk to real audiophiles, they've got real very expensive headphones and real mostly still tube things. And, then, you know, they'll listen to MP3s and stuff like that because that's okay and it's convenient.
I wish I could get a Macintosh amplifier. I can't afford one.
But the question is, how good is it?
Yeah.
You know, if it's... You know, tubes are nothing is what some people are saying, but whether it's tubes or nothing or whatever, it's what it's coming from that determines how good that sound's going to be. We're going to take another quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have met. Hi, how are you? How's it going?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm waking up now. We have Mark from Greece on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. I have kind of comments, but also gripes, if you got a second.
Sure.
You were talking about, you know, how things need maybe to be a little more universal and with connectors and stuff, and you got into the audio thing, and I got kind of one that encompasses it all. I have an LG TV, and I bought a soundbar for it and connected it via optical cable, and come to find out, after arguing with LG for 3 weeks and even sent a service person out, that I could not turn the TV to PCM audio. The TV would only pass through what was being broadcast. So I couldn't use the soundbar because the soundbar would only take PCM audio.
Wow.
So after arguing online with LG for 3 weeks when they insisted I could change it to PCM, they sent out a technician who then said, no, you can't change it.
What, was this an LG TV and an LG soundbar?
Yes.
Whoa.
It would only take PCM audio.
Wow.
And I guess most of their models can be changed from either Dolby Digital to PCM.
So it's it's not their fault. You bought the wrong one.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Basically, so what I had to do to make it work was change my cable box to PCM stereo, change my Blu-ray player to PCM stereo, and everything that's connected to TV has to be changed to PCM stereo.
Wow.
And not every device may have that option.
Thank God most of mine do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were just looking up million-dollar speakers.
They don't even put an analog audio jack on these TVs anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something as simple as an eighth-inch stereo jack is all they need to put on it.
Yeah.
Well, then they need the digital audio circuit on the inside, which adds to the price. What, a dollar? Maybe two?
Yeah.
Maybe 15 cents.
Yeah.
So that really made me angry, especially when they're arguing with me. They have the model number, and they're telling me, yes, you can do it. And I said, well, what you're telling me to do doesn't work. You know, there's no such setting.
Right.
So, and then they spent money to send somebody out here. So I got to find that infuriating and humorous at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, when somebody puts out that many different models, let's face it, tech support just reads the manuals.
And hopefully understands
them. You know, nobody's going to give them all those products to play with.
This is true. But at least if you have the model number, you have the same literature that I have that doesn't say anything in it about doing it.
Right, right.
So, the other thing I wanted to say was you were talking about the Beats audio. And funny because that they sound so crappy because another person that's behind it, besides Dr. Dre, is Jimmy Iovine. if you're familiar with him.
Right, right.
The record producer, I would think he knows what good audio sounds like.
Well, it's
yeah, you would think so.
You know, I mean, being that he's one of the big backers behind it besides Dr. Dre.
Yep.
You know, I could see maybe a rapper not knowing exactly how something might sound, but a record producer should pretty much know what audio should sound like and how good it should be.
Yeah.
So I find that kind of strange that, you know, they didn't do something about it, because really, at $300, they don't sound great.
You've listened to them as well?
Yes.
Yeah. They don't sound great.
You're not the target audience.
I've tried the buds. Earbuds,
yeah,
and the darn things are so heavy they fall out of your ears.
Yeah,
they don't even stay in.
Yeah,
and I really didn't want to invest in over the ear ones because I don't want to walk all over the place with over the ear cans. You know,
well, cans do sound better than plugs. They always
do.
Will.
But you know what? The funny thing is I've got a hundred and what? I bought it for $130. A Samsung Galaxy player.
Yeah,
MP3 player. And the thing came with Samsung earbuds. And those earbuds are phenomenal with whatever little EQ setting they have in there. I have a pair of a Monster earbuds.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were expensive for me. I mean, they were originally a little over $100, and I got them on sale. So I got them for like $60. And they don't even sound as good as the ones that came with the player.
Nice.
Usually you throw away the ones that come with your device.
Yeah, I got a pair of Chic Buds or Chic Buds, C-H-I-C Buds.
Right.
And they wanted me to write a review, so I did. And they have an awfully nice sound to them. They're not manly looking, but they are. but the sound is amazing. And they're not a terribly expensive company either, so it can be done.
So I mean, I was all ready to throw away those earbuds, and I put them in. I went, wow, these sound better than $100 earbuds.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't EQ the thing right to make the Monsters sound good.
Amazing. That's kind of amazing.
There you go. Well, that's my gripe. Thank you for letting me get that out.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. Have fun.
And I got to imagine a lot of the problem is everyone's different ear.
That's certainly part of it, yes.
What they listen to, how they listen to it, you know, what damage you've had in the past from, you know, loud noises or whatnot. Yeah, your range of hearing. Yeah, as you get older, your hearing loss. In fact, when Apple announced their ear pods, they said they laser scanned thousands of ears to generate a shape that fits in the ear better. I actually haven't gotten around to listening to them yet because I still have older ear. I have old devices and I haven't gotten around to buying anything new lately. But trying to get things fit in your ear because you want to cut out the outside noise to make the sound richer. That's why cans that fit over the ear always sound better because they block the outside noise more.
Well, and they also generally have bigger speakers.
Yeah, the bigger the speaker, the better. You know, little tiny earbuds might
have a little space before your before your ear, so that the air has a chance to vibrate and increase the sound.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, Beck. I think we got time to talk to Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a couple questions for you. I've running Windows 7 Ultimate Classic Shell is over it. I just installed a new. I upgraded from my 100-gig solid state to a 250-gig for my operating system, and I had a clone that was about a year and a half old. I put that in. I'm trying to get things back to where I want them now. There's two things that are bothering me, and I can't figure out how to get to fix. When I boot up now, it always stops on user account control for the Samsung Magician application. I've gone online. They say I can change my local security policy to basically not notify me on anything. I never had that problem before. I never had to okay that every time I booted the computer. Is there something I can do to... I know there's no whitelist or something like that, but is there anything I can do without lowering my security settings to let it just boot? 'Cause
I honestly don't even know what the Samsung Magician is.
I've found a couple of references to it. It's one of the controller software for the SSD drive. And one of the blogs is you go into your startup folder, you know, start menu program startup, and remove the program from the startup folder.
Really? So not even run it?
Right.
But if it's part of the new hard drive...
It's an optimizer. But once you've optimized your drive, how many times do you have to optimize it?
Okay, so just remove it out of the start folder. Okay, that's an easy one. I can do that.
There you go.
Next one is along the taskbar at the bottom, I have a libraries button that it's pinned to the right.
Okay.
I never use the libraries. I keep all my data on a separate hard drive, but it takes up room on the taskbar.
Right.
And I can't get rid of it.
You can't unpin it?
You should be able to right-click and unpin.
No. I right-click and I get open, restore default, agent ransack, copy, and create shortcut. I've been online. I ran the program to take it, to remove it from my desktop. That Microsoft has, but I don't know how to get this off of the and of course when I click it I go to libraries, but I don't put anything in libraries.
Right.
Try the taskbar properties maybe?
No, I go to taskbar properties.
No, the
oh, go to the library itself and right click. So in a window on the desktop, go to that library and try right clicking on the icon there and unpin. That's one suggestion I found.
And I'm not sure I actually follow that one.
Click on that library icon so the library opens.
Yep.
And then you may have to go up a level to get to the actual library icon and not the contents of the library.
Right.
And then right-click on that library icon and see if there's an unpin command.
There's a collapse. My agent ransack, restall default, open new window, copy, new library.
I think you have to use... You have to do it from your GPO. Your general... Your policies.
Okay.
Man, you're not going to like this.
I don't mind. I'll go into the registry. I'm not afraid of doing that.
Well, we don't recommend it as you.
Yeah, we don't like doing that.
Calling us.
And I understand. I'm very careful, but I'm not afraid of doing it.
All right. We have a. Steve will post this. This is huge.
Yeah, we better not say just. It's not for the light at heart.
Yeah, it's you'll probably want to spell library correctly.
Well, Google does that for me.
Oh, that's right. it's the second. It's the second one.
Remove default pinned items. Social.
The GPO. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
It's the group policy object, and you have to go into group policy manager, which is easy enough to do, and it gives you all the directions on how to do that. Steve will post that momentarily.
Okay.
Like I said, pinning things easy. Unpinning stuff, particularly things that Microsoft doesn't think you should ever unpin.
Right.
That's harder.
Yep. Like they always want me to, I'm always going to want to put stuff where when I mess up my operating system, I lose all my data.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with you? Of course you do.
Of course I do. A recommendation, everyone's listening, Guy, grab a copy of Hiram's and run a ghost on your operating system. Then you don't have to go through what I'm going through now.
No, I understand that. I am modifying my opinion that you should never ghost your entire operating system because there are some times when it's useful. I never restore an operating system. I always reinstall from new, because if there's been something wrong with your operating system that you have to restore it, you probably copied the bad thing already. But in a situation like yours, we're talking about something entirely different.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks. Have fun. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You seem to have wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this nonsense. We're going to give you a chance to do it again because we know you're a slow learner. We're going to take a slightly longer hiatus here, a few more minutes, and then we're going to come back and bring you more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely
member-supported
Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, I was just discovering all the...
I've got that one, too. That's four fingers up on mine. Multi-touch trackpads.
Yeah. Well, we just had an update to the Chrome OS, and they added a whole bunch of features, including a whole bunch of multi-touch gestures and the ability to create folders of your apps. Like you can on your phone.
Okay. As I say, phones, I got an update. No big deal. You know, they've been doing quite a few updates, like you were saying, to the phone systems, too. I mean, it's been unbelievable. Kathy's, it just totally whacked it right out. She had to do a factory reset.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I've a couple other folks now were texting or emailing me this morning. I quick noticed that we're having the same issue. And the best thing to do is, if you can, folks, if you're having a problem, you know, it's, and I guess it's, like I say, it is happening to quite a few, is go to the particular phone manufacturer.
Right.
And look at them, and they will tell you how to do a factory reset. Quite often on most of the Android phones, it's just going into the settings and then down to preference, and there's an option there that's called factory restore.
Right.
And you can press that, and it'll do a back to a restore and put your machine back to working order.
Right. One of the issues that Google has always had is that because the Android operating system is open source,
mm-hmm.
the people who make the operating system actually go through the carrier. So Google doesn't update your phone. Verizon does, or
right.
AT&T does, or Sprint does.
Right.
And if they don't do a good job of updating that operating system to you, people blame Google, but it's not their fault. That's why Google now has the Google Silver thing. They're going to create a line of phones that are labeled Google Silver. Those will be pure Android phones that come, and the updates come directly from Google, not through the manufacturers.
Mm. I was looking again at the LG phone.
Nice.
That 4F.
Nice.
Let's see if I can do an early upgrade.
Yeah, I'm well past due for an upgrade, but I can't.
I thought you loved your Razer Max.
Oh, I do. No, that I do. I mean, I have
but
no...
But there's a better one now.
Well, the big thing is they're getting better battery life. They're getting larger screens. They're getting sharper screens and slightly faster chips in them. So every, you know, it's that incremental. But we tell people all the time, don't wait. There will always be something better coming out. Jump in and be happy with what you've got.
Well, and maybe try to get a
1 year old and they still love it.
Maybe try to get a 1 year contract and not two.
Right. Yeah, but that usually doesn't happen. But I mean, no, the Razer Max is a phenomenal phone for me. I mean, the battery life is great. And Kathy has just I've got the XX. She's just got the X. And that even lasts a long time. Yep. And that woman does a heck of a lot of texting.
What I've discovered is my phone will last for an awful long time until I turn on the GPS.
Oh, okay.
And then it eats it up. And there are a couple of products that I've installed that are constantly looking for the location. And that just kills my battery. If I turn off GPS, battery lasts forever.
And a lot of times it can use Wi-Fi triangulation at less power than GPS satellite.
Right.
Because it's got to find four satellites to get a GPS lock.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing, though. I've got the, 1 gigabyte a month for the data plan.
Right.
And I haven't hit it yet because I found more spots where if I'm doing Google searches or whatever, I can find free Wi-Fi.
Sure.
And folks should be aware of that. I mean, if you're into a data plan, you happen to be at a mall or around different places, there is so much
almost
free
everywhere.
Wi-Fi out there that's wide open that if you're just doing a Google search, and especially on a phone or a tablet, that you have no worries. And you can search to your heart's content, and it doesn't eat up your data plan.
Yeah.
I've got one client that has, you know, big corporate client that has protected Wi-Fi, and even if I get on the network, they block VPN services, they block screen sharing services. I think they block everything, but web and then a lot of websites are blocked too. So I'm doing research on their problem, and discussion forum websites are blocked by the proxy filter.
Yeah,
and I always feel bad when I get this giant red warning that I might have, you know, messed up this guy's reputation. No. I'm just trying to fix his computer. I'm not trying to do something bad.
Yeah.
But that's one of the only places now I use cellular on my iPad, so that I don't have to go through their proxy stuff.
But yeah,
which blocks all my research.
I was one day at a meeting with a guy, and we were both sitting there with our laptops trying to get some work done, and the place we were at, the Wi-Fi went out. So I set my phone to be a hotspot,
mm-hmm.
plugged the phone into the Chromebook,
mm-hmm.
and we both had battery for like 4 hours. We both had Wi-Fi for like 4 hours.
Yep.
I was well over 4 gig that month because mm-hmm. I was going to pick up my daughter, so we were listening to Pandora for 4 days. Elaine was doing Farmville for 4 days and everything else. So I used a massive bucket load of data that month, but I still have unlimited. God bless you, Verizon, for not yet taking that away from me. And so,
well, that's what we're seeing a lot of people. If you buy a new phone, they say, well, your old plan isn't available anymore, so you have to get a new plan.
Right.
So the trick there is you don't buy it under contract. You pay the $800 for the phone, and then you can keep your old plan.
Right.
Then you can buy a phone whenever you want.
You can't.
At $800 a piece.
Yeah.
An unsubsidized smartphone, yeah.
Right. But you know what? In order to keep the unlimited data, it's worth it to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, you add up what that data plan would cost, especially, you look at what your data per month is.
Right.
Add up that, what would you say, 10 gig of data?
Right.
That's probably, 50, 60 bucks a month. If you bought that data plan, maybe more, over that 2 year, that's extra money that $800 upfront cost doesn't include. So and that's the whole cell phone industry. You buy your phone for $100 and you don't realize you're gonna pay $3,000 over 2 years.
Yeah. Right.
Because you pay $800 up front and then you pay less through the year.
And then you also now have those other packages where you can get four lines for $140 unlimited.
$40 per phone, $160. But that's only 10 gigs of shared data per...
And every time they do that in the commercials, people go, that's pretty good. And I always scream, no, it isn't!
That's 2.5 gigs per user.
That's nothing.
Yeah. So, unlimited talk, unlimited texting doesn't matter anymore because hardly anyone uses their phone for phone calls.
Right.
It's all data plans now, and that's what Apple, one of the things they've announced with OS 10.10, which could have been, so they're named after California landmarks now. OS 10.10, they joked it could have been Oxnard, that has an X in it.
Yeah.
Rancho Cucamonga, or there's a little town in Northern California called Weed.
Nice.
So they settled on Yosemite. So OS 10.10 Yosemite and iOS 8. One of the things you're going to be able to do now is make phone calls over the internet through the FaceTime video app. Now we'll be able to more easily call regular telephones.
And right, like Google Voice.
Right. And yeah. So you're skipping the whole cellular industry. So now on your iPhone, you can make all your FaceTime calls over data and not over minutes.
Right.
Now it's even more important to keep track of what your data plan is. And we think part of the reason the phone companies are giving unlimited minutes is they know they can, because no one uses minutes much anymore. So it doesn't cost them anything to say unlimited minutes.
Right. Well, one of the things that Google is doing, and we talked about it last week, I think, Google is looking to create a series of satellites that will give us Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yep.
Everywhere. And whatever that's worth, if you can do your phone over Wi-Fi, you can get rid of your carrier plan altogether,
yep.
Which is not going to make them happy, but it's in the long run, it's much cheaper for you. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve, calling back again from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Okay. I have actually two new questions. I'm working on a friend's computer, and I'm sure you guys can help me with this.
But no pressure.
None at all. None at all. I'll sue you if you don't.
Of course.
When we boot her computer, she gets two messages that we just dismiss, and everything seems to work normally. First one is, and I've gotten the background, basically it's /user/name/appdata/local/conduit.
Yep.
Background. Do you want me to continue on that one?
The conduit plugin. The conduit is a company.
Yeah.
And they sell advertising services, and it comes through a lot of games and social network issues. They have a conduit search that allows you to do social searching. Most people consider that malware.
No. It's a pup.
Yeah, potentially unwanted program.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there are ways to remove conduit. There should be in the add remove programs a way to remove it. And you may also have to remove it as a plugin from each of your browsers. So she accidentally installed it somewhere when she installed something else.
By not reading the screens that she agreed okay to.
Never will.
Well, and it's something like, do you want to make your searches better? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't do that, but we'll install it anyway.
Right.
Trying to tell, do not take the default, always go to custom. But
yeah.
All right, well, that's excellent. I'm sure we'll find that one.
Steve is going along
the same line.
So hold on. Steve is going to put that on Soundbites as well, a link to how you get rid of that.
I feel honored. I'm getting two listings now.
So far, might be three. Keep going.
The next one is SOS messaging has stopped working. And I've researched
SOS?
That and it said it might be a bank thing, but she's logged into, she's on ESL, she's logged into ESL without any problems, so basically, it's another pop-up. I just close it down. That's all it says.
It's
SOS messaging has stopped working.
SOS, not SMS.
Correct.
There's a backup service called Stronghold
Online. Yeah, that's the only one I know of. And it comes with that.
Did you, by any chance, recently do Security Tango on...
Yeah, I did.
So what probably happened is it removed a lot of this junk, but left some pieces behind. So you can go into the folder it says it's trying to run from and remove it from there as well.
Okay.
So go to that full path it's telling you, and you should be able to delete that last piece of the program.
That one doesn't give me a pass. That one just says SOS messaging has stopped working.
There is a program called SOS Online Backup. And you should see if that's installed. Uninstalling it first and then running something like CC Cleaner, Revo Uninstaller, that sort of fare, should get rid of all of that. Okay. CCleaner, not CC Cleaner.
Right, I know. Everybody does it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do those things. Quick one if I can. Why doesn't Revo list all my programs? There's a number of programs that I want to remove, and they won't be on Revo, but I can go to add remove, and they are there.
Were they installed before Revo was installed?
I don't think so. Revo is one of the first things I put in there. And Revo's supposed to look, isn't it? I mean, it's supposed to find all the programs.
There's a check.
Yeah, it should.
Well, there's another, what do they call it, comprehensive scan, something like that, to look harder.
Okay.
And you got the latest, greatest version?
Yeah, I keep it updated all the time.
Man.
That's a good question, and I don't actually know the answer to that.
I took me 5 tries, but I finally stumped you.
There you go. Thanks.
Thank you,
don't
guys.
Ever call again.
Yep.
All right, guys. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, probably Steve from Greece, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1.
Sorry. You pointed at me. You...
Wait a minute. They have these things called headphones.
I don't need put them headphones. You pointed at me. You pointed,
I pointed
at me.
You.
You pointed at me.
Which finger did he use?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco, and I was pointed at.
I'm Dave Ray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
At 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You pointed at me. It's all I have to say.
Hey, talk to the hand. Exactly. They say listening. Remember, I control the mics.
I understand you. Control the mics. You control the pointer when you point.
And I turned it on. You can hear it in your headset.
I wasn't wearing my headset because you were pointing at me.
You had it.
You pointed at me. Look, ladies and gentlemen, any of you have ever been in radio for more than, say, 11 seconds, you know that the person on the board can let you know that the show has started in one of several ways, and it's time for you to talk. They can point at you, which is the traditional way that means you start talking now. They can scream at you or open their eyes real big like a cartoon wolf, which means you should have talked 10 seconds ago, or they can assume that you already have your headphones on and you're listening for when you should start to talk. Now, when the person who is on the board sees you're not actually wearing your headsets and then points at you and then is upset that you started talking, there's an issue here.
See, I didn't make that mistake when I was in.
Michael never made that mistake.
Wait a minute. Who just left their mic on?
I left.
You just said you control the mics.
You just told us.
But he always turns his off.
Look, I took full responsibility.
I'm gonna go answer the phones.
That's okay. I'm talking. I took full responsibility for that. Absolutely took responsibility for having left my mic on. I apologize to all of those of you who heard me talking while my mic was on. However, I'm not the one who pointed. Someone else pointed. The person at the mic pointed. See, right now, if Michael pointed at me, I wouldn't start talking because he's not at the board. If Steve pointed at me, I would slap him because it's rude. But Dave pointed at me. That's his job, to point at me and get me to start talking. And now we're going to go back to Bob.
Maybe.
From Henrietta.
I'm not going to point to you, so you don't know.
Is this?
I'm going to let you guess.
Yeah, right. Is this the same?
See how this works. Wait till the next break. I'm going to leave you guessing.
Now we can almost tell when he puts that blue slider.
Go ahead.
I'm guessing maybe I'm on the air.
Yeah.
Is this the Bob from earlier?
Suggestion for your last caller before I stop home and get out of the car. Revo's uninstaller, the free version, will not see 64-bit apps.
I saw a notice of that in the searching I was doing, but all of those statements were like 2-3 years old, and I thought, well, they have to have fixed that by now.
No, it's incentive to purchase the paid version.
Ah.
That makes sense.
That's why he's not seeing them, most likely. And B, be very careful with conduits on installers. There's some of them, like for Search Protect, which will delete NTLDR from the directory of anything that's running Windows XP or something like that.
Wow.
And
we'll teach you to uninstall us.
If that's gone.
Yep.
Wow, they might uninstall the NT loader.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Vista or later doesn't need that to boot, but XP does.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Have fun, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Wow, thanks, Bob.
But
yeah, just one more reason I love Linux. I'm sorry. Just one more reason I love Linux. Wow. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, so Revo, I understand that. 64-bit apps, they want you to pay. That's one of the ways that they get people to pay. I get that. I really do. And I understand why they do it. I don't necessarily have to like it, but I do understand why they do it. And you know what? It's a free program.
And
if you don't like it, get your money back, I guess, is their thought.
And for the longest time, it didn't matter because there weren't that many 64-bit programs. Now almost everything is.
Right. Right, my version of Linux is full 64-bit. I never install anything that's 32. Rarely install anything that's 32-bit. I've got a couple of programs that I testing that are 32-bit programs.
Now the strange thing is on their website, the limitation, it says full 64-bit compatibility for Windows, different Windows versions, is only available in Pro. Now, to me, I would read that as saying it runs in 64-bit Windows, not that it removes 64-bit.
Right.
So it doesn't quite imply that it won't remove 64-bit programs.
Or at least their implication is vaguer than it should be.
Yeah.
They're inferring.
Yeah, I absolutely understand.
What does fully compatible mean?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So get the 30-day trial and do what you need to. And then if it works for you, You can pay them the. How much is it?
It's not terribly expensive, I don't think.
Okay, if I don't want to download it, how about if I just want to buy it right out? There we go. Buy now. One computer, $39. Not that bad.
No, it's ridiculous. It's a one-time charge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, $40 and you're done. Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah.
I know we all like to not spend any money we don't have to, but I guess it depends on what it is you're doing.
Exactly. You know, and again, it goes back to the old days of shareware and that type of stuff. And some of these other programs that we recommend. Yeah, you can get the free version. But you know what? To help promote that programmer and keep them going to keep the program up to date and add other features and everything else, it doesn't hurt to, you know, pay that fee. If you really enjoy that program that much and it's one that, you know, you just got to rely on totally, you really should think about taking the time and registering because they're usually not that much.
Right. And we've seen more than once a program that just disappears because the programmer wasn't getting any money at all for it and just decided
can't play anymore. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah.
Well, I know what that's like. I wrote a couple programs back in the 80s. You know, and again, people wanted it, and they were asking me for, you know, to do this update and that update, and it was great. And I was only charging, at the time, $15 for the program. But nobody ever wanted, out of all the requests, and I think I had maybe about two, ever sent me $15.
Yep.
The rest just, you know, out of those two programs, never wanted to support it. And it's like, well, then forget it. I'm not going to spend the times and hours of coding when I could be doing other stuff.
And now we're seeing the race to the bottom, as it's become called, in the app stores, where 99 cents is the common price. And if you want to charge $2 for your app, you're outrageously expensive.
Right. Back in 1982, I downloaded a program called PC File, which is a flat file database program from Jim Button.
Did that become PFS?
He wanted, I forget how much it was. It was ridiculously cheap, but it was shareware. It was the first shareware program. He developed the company called Buttonware. And I sent him whatever it was he asked for. I forget what it was. And he actually wrote back to me and said, "You're the first person who's ever paid for this program."
Oh, my God.
I'm delighted to find it. I may well then be
the first person
who ever paid
for a shareware program. Wow.
It's certainly a possibility, because I'm certainly the first person.
Goodness, you're old.
I am old. I'm ancient. I'm freaking ancient. I loved that program. Holy moly, I loved that program. I think he also did PC Write. Did he do PC Write as well and PC Talk?
PC File Plus became DBase 3.
Yeah. It was a great program. But yeah, it was... And he originally wrote it for marketing his own, for managing a church mailing list on an Apple II. He ported it to CPM. He ported it to DOS. It was a great... PC File Plus came out. PC File R, which had limited relational capabilities. PC Plus became DBase. It was a pretty cool program. I really liked it. It got me involved lifelong in databases. Now I'm mostly a MySQL guy, but it's all out there. Here's an interesting story. Security researchers have documented another first in the annals of Android malware, a Trojan that encrypts photos, videos, and documents stored on a device and demands a ransom for them to be restored. Yes, it's a version of CryptoLocker. The crudeness of Android's Simple Locker, as the malicious app has been dubbed, suggests it's still in the proof of concept phase. Robert Lipovsky, who is a malware researcher for the antivirus provider ESET, said in a recent blog post, the malware also addresses users in Russia, in Russian, and demands that payments be made in Ukrainian hryvnias. I apologize to all the Ukrainians for mispronouncing your national currency name. An indication that it targets only people in Eastern Europe. Still, the Trojan, with its combination of social engineering, strong encryption, and robust internet architecture, could be a harbinger of more serious and widespread threats to come. After all, the first Android Trojans to make hefty SMS charges also debuted in the same region. Once installed on a device, the app delivers the following message. Warning, your phone is locked. This device is locked for viewing and distribution of child pornography, zoophilia, and other perversions. The malware scans a handset's SD card for all photo, video, and document files. It then uses an advanced encryption standard to encrypt them. It's not clear if paying the ransom actually results in the files being decrypted. ESET recommends users to not pay it. According to a separate post published Friday by Sophos, users can manually remove the malware by rebooting into safe mode as long as they don't mind permanently losing the files that have been encrypted. Sophos said it's also possible for victims to restore their files by recovering the AES key stored inside the malware, although that technique requires some effort. So do you worry about malware on an Android? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And the problem becomes that now that the bad guys have figured out a cool way to make money for themselves, it's even harder for us. You know, don't pay them is horrible advice if you don't have a backup. So you should have a backup. Everyone back up your data. Because if you don't pay the ransom, then the bad guys will stop creating ransomware.
Right.
But you got to get your data back, so you got to pay them. There've been reports about police departments that were infected by CryptoLocker and had to pay the ransom to get the police data back.
Right. Backup is the single most important thing you can do on your computer. With Android phones, you can reset to factory, then put in your Google username and password, and it will put back everything that was on your phone except the data. If you use a program like Lookout, which backs up your data, then you're in good shape. Or if you only take pictures and send them up to Google Plus, then that saves them there. I mean, there are ways to do that. If you have a computer, you should always be backing up your data. We talked about this several times in the past. There's a great program called Copy. Copy.com is the company. They have an installer that will you get 15 gigs of free disk space. I'll put my code up there. It will give you an extra 5 gigs, so it's 20 gig free forever. It's backed by Kaspersky. All the stuff is encrypted on your machine to send up to Kaspersky's servers. It's encrypted while it's at Kaspersky's servers. If you bring it back down, it's encrypted until it gets to you. So it's nice and clean, decent little place, and you'll end up with 20 free gig. And it will back up the file you point to. The thing I really love about this one, aside from the encryption, is that if you put a shortcut to a folder inside the folder that copies, it will copy everything inside that folder as well. So you don't have to change where or how you save things in order to save the stuff on your hard drive. So I'll put that in the as a message on Soundbites as soon as we take the break, and then we'll have an idea what that's about.
And one of the problems with these real time or online backup programs in the case of CryptoLocker is that if you get infected by CryptoLocker, it encrypts the data on your hard drive in that copy folder, which will then conveniently be backed up encrypted with a key you can't read. So you want to have an offline backup as well. Back up to a hard drive, unplug it from your computer, and put it in a fire safe. So you have that offline backup. Great. It's great to have online backup, online syncing, but you should have, you know, a 3-2-1 backup strategy. You want to have 3 copies of your data in 2 different locations, and one of them should be offsite.
Exactly. And Copy will do that. Clearly it's on the web somewhere.
Well, it's encrypted on your computer, so then they back it up.
No, it's encrypted during transmission.
Well, yeah, but CryptoLocker encrypts it on your computer.
Right, then
it gets copied in encrypted format.
Yes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, a whole lot more Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'd like to apologize to everyone on the Ustream.
Well, I didn't have the camera pointed in that time.
Oh, good.
I figured he wouldn't.
Good, but Dave,
I figured you weren't
going to
point at all.
Yeah. At 45 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. And we have James from Rochester on the line. Welcome, James. What can we do for you?
My question is there a way to keep the favorites list on Internet Explorer and also put the same list on Google Chrome and keep both?
The first time you launch Chrome, you can import your bookmarks from Internet Explorer. But I don't know if there's a way to keep them in sync.
But it's not keeping them in sync. I want the list on both favorites on Explorer and Chrome.
Right.
So when you open Chrome, you can import your Internet Explorer favorites.
But if you
make a new favorite, then you have to import them again.
There is a
But I just want to move the list as is right now. I'm not worried about the new ones.
Okay. There is a program, an extension, thank you, could not think of the word, for Chrome called Xmarks Bookmark Sync.
What is
it? Is that still around? I thought Xmarks shut down.
It doesn't seem to be.
Xmarks has been around for a while. Well, built into Chrome itself, you go to the Chrome menu, go to Bookmarks, and say Import. Mm-hmm. And that will import the bookmarks from your other browser.
And it keeps it on the other one also?
Yes. Yeah, okay, it just copies it.
So another question. My videos stall. They stop and start. How do you fix that?
Get a faster computer or a faster internet service.
That's the only thing?
Yeah. How much memory do you have in the computer?
I don't even know, but I know it's not near full.
Memory. It's working memory. 2 gigs, 3 gigs.
I don't even know.
Yeah. You should probably have at least 4 gigs of memory, if not more. And then how much video memory does your video card have? And then how fast is your internet service? So all
Sadly,
three of those
all
things.
Sadly, it's all three of those things, yeah.
How do you check the video card?
That would be in the specs that came with the computer, typically.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
Laptop, Toshiba.
Yeah. The likelihood, if it's not a really expensive laptop, and I mean really expensive.
Well, it's about $1,300.
Yeah, the likelihood is that you're sharing video RAM with the RAM in the computer.
Yeah, it's not dedicated.
Right. So what you need to do is make sure you've got lots of RAM in the computer, and any reputable dealer in town, including a couple I know of very close here, can add RAM to that machine, and that will help. Having a fast internet connection will help.
Yeah, I have the Roadrunner.
Yeah. So you need all three of those things to really do it.
And you have to be watching a video when no one else is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. There are some things that are simply out of your control. If you're watching a really, really popular video.
Now, this is when I go to like a CNN website and just look at a 2-minute clip.
Right. But if that's the latest news, there's probably 10 or 12 million other people.
Oh, okay. So that does it?
Yeah, that'll do the same sort of thing. So if you looked at yesterday's news, you might not have an issue.
Okay.
Looking at today's news, you might.
You also can.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
So you also can sometimes turn down the quality of the video.
Right.
Especially on YouTube, the lower right corner, there's a little quality icon. You know, you might be set to 1080p, which needs, you know, huge bandwidth and lots of memory. So cut that down to 720p or 480 or you know, even lower. The quality of the video will get lower, but it won't stall, maybe.
Right.
So, you know, make it as high as it can be before it starts stalling, and then you'll get the best quality at the best speed.
Yeah. And particularly if you're not showing it full screen, you certainly don't need 1080p.
So it looks like Xmarks is a bookmark syncing program that will sync bookmarks across all browsers, and they got bought by LastPass.
So they are still there.
They are still there. But I remember reading about the guy that wrote it was not writing it anymore because he probably took his money from LastPass and retired.
Well, yeah, exactly. Again, one of those deals where if people aren't buying it, he's going to stop making it. Luckily, somebody came in and
took it over,
the company. So. And LastPass is a fairly well respected and I believe fairly solvent company, so that's not an issue. But yeah, it's nice to know that something like Xmarks exists, and that you can sync across all browsers. So your Chrome, your Firefox, your Internet Explorer can all have the same set of bookmarks.
And that's the free version. And then the premium version also syncs to your mobile phones and tablets. And I'm trying to see how much the free version costs. Is $1 a month.
So $12 a year
to sync to
everything.
All your devices, yeah.
That's not bad at all. That really is not bad at all.
What's interesting is Google will sync to Google, and Safari will sync to Safari. Does Firefox sync to Firefox?
Probably.
Does Firefox have a mobile browser?
They're bringing out their own phone.
Yeah. So Safari on Mac and iPad, and then Chrome on any computer and any Chrome browser on mobile devices will sync within its own bookmarks. But this will let you sync your Safari bookmarks to Chrome and your Chrome bookmarks to Internet Explorer and all vice versa.
So if you do that on your computer for free, it will then sync to your phone through the browser itself.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure what
that's
their,
a sneaky way to do it. Yeah.
I'm not sure their model of making money is all that.
No, it's only $1 a month.
It's only $1 a month. It's $12 bucks, yeah, a year. What the heck? If
yeah,
making
really
that making that connection.
In fact, I have my Safari syncing turned on, but I have Chrome syncing turned off because I use the browsers for different things and right. I don't necessarily want my Chrome bookmarks to sync.
Right. So what's nice in Chromebook is you can set about 1 million different things to sync.
Yep.
A lot of people just leave it at whatever it might happen to be, which is everything. But you can choose to sync apps, autofill, bookmarks, extensions, history, settings, themes, and open tabs. So you can sync all of that or just some of that. So I tend to do autofill and passwords, but that's pretty much it because the extensions that I use here are not the extensions I'm going to be using on another device somewhere or things like that. So you can make that change pretty easily. It's pretty nice. It's a nice feature, and they all have something like that. So it's not a big deal one way or the other. But yeah, we have one of the things that is an issue for all of us is that multiplicity of devices.
Yep.
Back in the day when we had one thing, a desktop, you know, we were good.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had two things, a desktop and a laptop. And most of us learned fairly quickly how to copy the bookmarks file from the desktop to the laptop. And so that started us out the same, and so we were semi-happy there. But now we have desktop, laptops, Chromebooks, phones, tablets, who knows what. Some people have multiples of some of those things. And keeping them all in sync, assuming that's something you want to do. Nice, Dave. Well done, you. Dave just took apart his microphone.
It fell.
It fell. He's trying to figure out how to put it back together now. It
lefty,
involves
lefty, lighty, righty, loosey. No,
lefty, loosey, righty, tighty. It involves knowing left from right. He's apparently not good at that.
And now I dropped
now
the screw.
He's lost the screw.
It's a screw loose.
I hope you're on Ustream, people. I hope you're on Ustream because you're watching a guy who does this kind of stuff for a living, completely incapable of screwing a microphone into.
I got it back.
Eventually. It amused the heck out of us while it was happening. Some of this show has become more visual over the years. I forgot entirely what I was talking about.
Where were you going to go?
Copying. Are we done? Is that the... Oh, look at that. We're done. Okay, luckily I don't have to blather anymore. Listen, I want to thank everyone who called in. I really want to apologize to everyone. I mean, I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You really need to call earlier next week. We have to cut it off at a certain point. But I do want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to turn the operator's board into something closer to professional than we've had for the past couple of hours. Anyway, we want to thank you. It's Sound Bites on truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you next week. Thanks.